Why is it that you always move the goalposts when you reach a certain goal? It's a process of having a goal that just gives you something to go for. It doesn't matter where the goal line is. You could always move it. You move it forever, saying, okay, you're not going to be happy at 20 million, 50 million, 100 million. But ultimately, it's not the hitting the goal that matters. It's like having photos, the happy photo here and the happy photo there. Like in the middle is all the stuff that gets you to that next happy photo. You have to like do the things in the middle to like get to that other goal.
Welcome back to the show. My guest today is Ben Tossel. He writes an AI newsletter called Ben's Bytes. He also invests in early stage AI startups like OpenAI and Anthropic. He was previously the founder of MakerPad, a no-code education site that was acquired by Zapier in 2021. He just launched a new community called Acquire Founders, so I reached out to him to talk about what happens after you sell your company. Ben sold his company to Zapier in 2021, and he made enough money to retire from working. We discuss what it's like to sell your company, why he sold it, what he did in that first year, and the wave of emotions he felt after selling. We also talked about how he spent the money, what he's investing the money in today, and also picked his brain on how he's building an AI assistant. The dream for any entrepreneur is to sell their company and to ride off into the sunset. But after my own experience and talking to Ben and hearing stories from other founders in similar situations, it's not as glamorous as you think. If you're curious about what that journey is like, you'll enjoy this episode. Without further ado, please welcome Ben Tossel to the show. Welcome to another episode of the Crunch and Apricorn Show. Today, I'm pretty excited to have Ben on. And last time Ben and I caught up, we had both just sold our companies and we're fully vested. So we were catching up, trying to see what the other person was up to. We didn't know a lot of people that were going through that experience. So I went off and went on a sabbatical for a year and did absolutely nothing. Ben went down the AI rabbit hole before AI blew up. So I thought it'd be fun to just catch up and see what he's been up to since that last time we caught up. So welcome to the show, Ben.
Thanks for having me. I'm a listener and first-time guest. So yeah, excited to be on. Yeah, I can't remember when it was the last time we spoke. I think it was, it must have been 2022. Must have been around there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was just like lost founder, poor acquired founder who's now like lost trying to find his way. But yeah, since then launched the Ben's Bytes newsletter, did that before ChatGPT was launched. So it was like really good timing. So it just covers everything that's going on in AI every day. Now there's a million AI newsletters out there. And my wife and I had twins, so they are 9 months old now. So that's
congrats.
Been fairly busy. Thanks. That's been fairly busy. just running Ben's Bytes, focusing on that. Raised a fund, so yeah, investing in AI companies through the Ben's Bytes Fund. And then, yeah, just about to launch or relaunch Ben's Bytes as a AI education platform. So the previous company that I sold to Zapier was MakerPad, which was a no-code education site. And now, sort of come full circle, I jokingly refer to myself as the Nikita Beer of tutorial sites. So I'm launching basically like AI tutorials, like how do you use AI at work? Yeah. Like how do I use ChatGPT to do this thing or that thing? So yeah.
I remember when we last caught up, a lot of our conversation was around not starting another company. And I remember me being more in that camp and you were kind of in the camp of, I'm not really sure, I'm open to it, but I'm going to just follow my curiosity, see where it goes. Fast forward to 2024, do you feel like you're back in company building mode? Like that's your full-time job now?
In the last like month or so, it's been very like, oh yeah, I'm in this again. Like I'm doing this again. Like before, like, with the newsletter, it kind of wasn't a company, but it was, and it made more than my salary and almost the same amount as MakerPad did before we were acquired. So, I mean, that still was a company, really.
Yeah.
And a couple of people working there, but I don't know why, it just didn't feel like a company. But yeah, the last month or so, it feels like, okay, we're kind of going back to let's build a company again.
But did you just kind of like stumble into it? Was that your intention to see where it go? Or was it more along the lines of, I want to build and create this thing. Let's see if it kind of grows. Because the thing with your newsletter is it has a lot of subscribers. When I viewed it from the outside looking in, I was like, oh, he hit on something. Whether it's a newsletter, a company, or an app, like nothing grows that fast.
Yeah, I know. I think it obviously helped with timing, but I don't know whether it was sort of similar to before I launched MakerPad back in 2017, 18, before I did it. It wasn't like intentional. I was trying to build a company. I was trying to launch a bunch of things, none of which worked. And in that process, I then stumbled on, people wanted to know how I was building all those things, which then became MakerPad, which was like the accidental company came out of the fact that I was trying to like just test a bunch of stuff and I was following my curiosity that way. So it kind of feels like that same kind of pattern happened again, where I was following my like curiosity. AI was starting to really pick up. I was on the AI team before I left at Zapier. And that's where I was like, this is just like massive. This is going to be huge. There's no one doing the hustle type newsletter for AI. So I was like, well, I could do that. And all the ideas when we spoke, I had like loads of ideas and they're all like small projects and stuff. But I think when I know that I'm actually interested in doing something is when I've actually done something more than once. So like I could talk about all these ideas and like plan them out and decide, oh yeah, I could do this and that's how I can make money and this is how I could do that and sell it to these people. And that idea just stays in that folder, that note for however long. There's loads of them over the years. And then with a newsletter, I just started writing it. I wrote one day and then I wrote one the second day and I just kept on writing it. And I was like, okay, I've actually done the thing before thinking through the whole process of how this idea works and where it goes and all the rest of it. And it was just, this is interesting. No one's doing this. Let me do it. And then, fast forward to today, it's a different story.
Yeah, that's amazing. It sounds like you follow your curiosity and one thing led to the other. There's a lot of timing and luck involved, but it's grown to bigger than what you anticipated.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's like, I don't know, the thing that I like to do is build stuff on the internet. Like, obviously, the end goal of that is make money from building stuff on the internet. But I think I don't necessarily want to choose to build a company. But that kind of comes with, if you want to build something on the internet and make money from it, it's usually from a company, unless you're going to do OnlyFans or something, which I don't think I'm cut out for. I think it just... That's kind of the game I like to play. I sort of realized, and a lot of time when I was at Zapier and chatting with you around that time, I was like, I don't want to work again. I don't want to do that. Like, I've done my thing. I sort of pushed the MakerPad thing to the side thing. Right, okay, done that, completed it. Don't really want to associate myself with the MakerPad guy anymore. And the further I've come away from that, like in time, the further I've gone, like the more I've gone back to that and been like, yeah, but I am the MakerPad guy. Like, that's how I did my thing. And I like to figure out building stuff on the internet and making money from it. And that kind of, you know, I'm just leaning back into that again. And I've just gone full circle.
Full circle.
Or I've gone nowhere based on how you look at that. So
for me, that's usually how the creative process works for me. I'll come up with an original idea and then I'll go in this long full circle of trying all these other things. And then you just go back to the original idea, which is like a funny process.
Yeah. And I also have the same where if I've got a list of ideas and there's something on there that every few months I come back to, and I'm like, that still should be a thing. Like no one's done it the way I envisage that being done. And then, this sort of AI education platform is one of them. Like people always ask me about the MakerPad for AI. I was like, yeah, I'm not doing the education thing anymore. That's not me. And as time has gone on, I'm not seeing anyone doing that the way that I would do it. So I'm like, okay, well, like it's a massive opportunity. I think it's a massive, massive thing to build, and not like VC thing. I'm not interested in all of that. But like personally, I think it's a big, big opportunity. So just feels like, well, I've done this before. I know how to do it. I'm back in the sort of mindset of, yeah, that's the kind of thing I can build. I like to build. We've done it before. It's the right time. There's a big opportunity. So like I'm running out of reasons not to do it. And it's something I keep coming back to, or other people keep reminding me to think about that thing. So yeah, I think it's just one of those, again, of I can spin up a tutorial really quickly. And if I have done that, I've already taken like a couple of steps into that idea's direction. Whereas with other ideas on my list, I've like thought of it and bought the domain. And then I just don't count that as like, that's no progress in it.
Yeah.
If I actually make a landing page or I've actually like done some actual work behind it, that shows me, that proves to myself that I'm interested enough to like do something with this. So pursue it a bit more.
Yeah, I call that the idea marination stage. I'll let ideas marinate and 3-6 months might go by, or a year or two. And if it's still kind of lingering, then I'll kind of jump in the deep end and start executing it. And once I start executing it, then I know that that's an idea that's worth pursuing, because just getting off the couch to execute it is like such a huge first step.
Yeah. And I think it's an even bigger first step for an acquired founder for some reason.
Yeah, it is.
I think it is, because knowing how I felt being acquired, and it was like, the deal was great, the acquisition was great. It was just like my mindset and like mental thinking around all of it was just like, is that it? Like, that's my company. I've done it. And like, that was kind of, there's a weird, well, that was the goal. The goal was build something to a big enough state that I could sell it and make money that I didn't necessarily need to work again. But then when you get there, there's loads of research on this as well. And lots of people talk about it who've been in that situation, being like, I've kind of lost now. What do I do? Do I start another company? You kind of burnt out. You want to rest for a bit. But then I think if you do some work on yourself, you kind of either, it might be like women giving birth. They kind of forget all that horrible 3-month period of giving birth and then the baby's screaming their heads off. And then they forget like that it was that tough. So maybe I'll do that again. But knowing that I was just sat in this room, just like looking around thinking, what am I doing? What am I going to do? Got all these ideas written down. I haven't done anything to do any of them.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? And then something comes out eventually through that process to be like, oh, I've actually written two newsletters 2 days in a row and there's people subscribing to it. Like, that feels good. I like that feeling. The creation process is like, it's not in gear 5, but it's in gear 1. And then you kind of remember the stuff you like about that whole process.
Yeah, let's go back to like when you sold MakerPad. Why did you decide to sell MakerPad to Zapier?
Yeah, so it felt like I almost had built it to be acquirable by a no-code tool or a no-code platform. Because it wasn't going to be a big VC exit. It's not that kind of company. It was a no-code tutorial company. Like, you can teach people how to build stuff without code, essentially. And I don't know, you know as well as I do, probably more, that education companies are difficult. People go in and out of learning. I think the business model of a education company seems to be, for all the successful ones anyway, it seems to either be really massive, massive scale, or it's you sort of target companies and get into their learning budgets and then they roll that out to their employees and that's how they make a lot of money. So we were kind of just doing tutorials. That was my first time thing. That was like the first time founder basically that got distracted with every little thing I wanted to do extra. Like, oh, we could build this into like what GitHub is for developers profiles. We could be for no code profiles and all this kind of stuff that I was just exercising my curiosity within that. Like, I'm a company builder, product builder person. So in the end, it was like, what is MakerPad? Like, people pay for the education stuff, really, and there's a community part of it. But like, where does this go? How does this get bigger? And I think that I was like, I just don't know what the next step is of where this goes. It's either like, do we raise money? It doesn't feel like a VC business, so I'd have to just lie to investors. Or we've got to really figure out like the actual core thing that we're selling and get it to the people that want to buy it. And it was at that time that sort of Zapier came around and we started chatting about an acquisition. And I was like, or Option three is actually MakerPad just can be free and can be open to all, which I think it should be, because that's great, but that doesn't make for a good business, under the roof of the leading no-code automation company that like glues everything together. So to me, it was like, this means the MakerPad can live on. It can be in its form that allows it to be more as accessible as possible. And like, it was also a great deal for me. Like, it was one of those situations where I think Jason Cohen, I saw him or watched him, listened to him on the My First Million podcast recently, and I hadn't listened to anything of his before, but he's got a blog and he talked about this. I think it's called, I can't remember what it's called now, Something on the King, where he talks about if people offered you, there's two boxes, someone offered you 10 million in one box, and in the other box, there's a 50-50 chance of there being zero or 20 million, which box would you take? And it's like, well, the first box, because it's guaranteed 10 million. And he talks about that in the context of his company. And he always talked to his employees saying, we are building this to like make money from it. And if someone offers us something that is a great acquisition, we're going to take it. But that is just how I'm thinking about building this company. And lots of companies don't talk about that.
No, they don't.
But that's exactly what I was doing. I was building that to be like, well, at some point, I'd love to be able to sell this and make millions off it and do whatever I want to do next. And that we'll talk about. So that's what came. And it's one of those where if I was going to run MakerPad to the value of what the deal was, how many years of that is like, do I have to do successfully? And like, we need to nail a bunch of these things in order to get to there. But yeah, ultimately it just comes to when someone wants to acquire a business, that's what someone is willing to pay today. And yes, it's always a multiple of something, revenue or profit. If you don't take it, that's you committing to say, I think it's worth more than that in a short time, because you've got to still run that company year after year to make it more successful, I guess.
Yeah. So it sounds like there's like the two buckets or that you mentioned, and you knew that you're building the company in that first bucket. And when Zapier came along, it was one, a good amount of money to buy the company that would be life-changing for you and, you know, the team. And then two, it just felt like such a natural place for it to go. So, you know, what would be a better outcome than this?
Exactly.
Yeah. Outside of that, maybe you wait a few years, but is Zapier going to come back? The fit just made so much more sense. And it also gave you the freedom to, you know, close that chapter and move on to the next thing. But you also mentioned that you didn't really know what else there was to do with the company at that point.
Yeah, you were in a moment of figuring, we've got to refigure this out, go back to thinking about this. And it wasn't like I'd been building MakerPad for 10 years and I'd like needed out, but I'd been building things for many years that none of them worked except for MakerPad. So I was kind of burnt out from all of that anyway. And yeah, like you said, it's one of those, it's a life-changing amount of money. It was the best possible fit that I could ever see of selling. Like, I'm not sure I'd want to sell that company to anyone else.
Yeah.
And then if I turned down that package of those two things, then I've got to really consider what am I trying to get then? Like, where is that other goalpost really? And really, it probably would have been, I don't know, maybe more money to Zapier in 2 years. Like, it's just probably the same thing. So, it felt like a no-brainer to me. And I think in that instance, I've got to like listen to your gut and think, I can't sort of figure this out another way that makes more sense than this way.
Yeah. Then what happened in that first year? So you sold the company, let's say we can skip through the working at a company for someone else where you're not the boss. And you know, that's probably a transition that we can dive into another day. But as an individual person, what happened in that first year? Like, were you happy? Were you excited? You get all this money. Like, what is that like?
It's great and awful. I think it's mostly like I think everyone, maybe not you actually, remembering our conversation, but maybe everyone when you sell a company, you think, well, I can definitely do a year. A year is nothing.
Yeah.
I can work
I thought that. It was very difficult.
My scenario, it was very different. It was MakerPad can run independently of Zapier. Don't worry about all the processes and all that stuff. So it was like, you just carry on doing your thing, but maybe, like, I don't know, should we try these other things? So we started trying some other things. So that first sort of 6-12 months, I was still pretty excited to be like, okay, I've got a great payday. I'm now buying a house, buying a car, going on holidays, all the rest of it. And I still get to operate my little team on our own, trying our things, but without thinking about we need to make the most amount of money per year doing this. So it was generally pretty good. And I think it was probably coming up to the 12-month mark thinking, vesting is 4 years. So that's one. And then you've got another three of that. Like, where am I now? How do I feel about where I am and what I want to be doing and what's next? And is it all it sort of is hyped up to be to have sold your company? And it's like, yeah, but I'm still working on the same thing. So I don't know if there's an element of like expectation or subconscious expectation that when you sell a company that the thing that you're working on changes as well. And like, that should be part of it. So I think in some companies it is. They're like, if it's a product or an acquihire, maybe that comes in, you start working with a different team, you start doing different things. And then there's a bit of that that we were doing at Zapier then, I think, with the MakerPad team. Like, we were saying, we want to be more integrated. So let's, like, you know, get involved with Zapier a bit more. And then it was probably then that I was like, I don't know, I like actually doing my thing, even though that was the thing I just asked for.
Yeah.
And I think it was just, yeah, I'm just sat in this room. Like I said, I had a therapist the whole time who actually was she's my personal assistant and therapist. So she's training him, doing her master's and stuff in therapy, dealing specifically with CEOs and who have like stress. So it was like, okay, this is the perfect person to be my assistant and therapist. So we spoke multiple times a week. And we have done for 3 years now. And I don't know, she just saw, and I saw by having conversations with her, I was going through like cycles of, yeah, no, I feel really good. And then just being like, oh, I just don't know what I'm going to do. And like, there's a long time. Like if I want to do anything else, there's this weird, it's like I'm giving back money that I've been given already. But it isn't really that, because the deal is contingent on you vesting. So you haven't been given anything extra other than what you stay in it. There's like a real battle in my head of like, if I go and do something else, it has to be much bigger than whatever I'm leaving on the table, which I don't think is really the right way to think about it now.
How would you think about it now if you had to go back?
I don't know. What's the price on how you're going to, like, feel and be each week, each day? And I don't know if I'd still put the same price on it, but it felt like a much more meaningful amount that I had to like seriously consider it. Cause I was just sort of sat here miserable thinking, I'm just like, I am just a bit lost. I just don't really know if I do go and leave. Firstly, that's that big decision with all that like leaving on the table, but also then what, like, there's no guarantee I can do another thing successfully. What, am I going to go and work for someone else? Like, I don't really want to do that thing. There's kind of unlimited but limited amounts of things that I can do if I want to make money on the internet my way. Unlimited, because obviously you could try any idea, but limited in probably where my zones of competence are or skills and things I know.
It's often that you sell your company, but most people don't realize that when you sell your company, you could structure the deal in any way that you want, but most of the time you're going to have to work for the other company and you're going to invest. And investing means that the shares you're going to get is given back to you over a period of time. Yours sounds like 4 years. I've heard of other founders, well, they'll do it for 1, 2, or 3 years, but that's like a big negotiating factor. And then going from being the founder and CEO to not, it's a big, big change. And a lot of people struggle with that decision. Should I be miserable and continue work at this company, or should I leave now and leave all this stock on the table? And that has probably been one of the biggest struggles that I've found from talking to a lot of founders that are in that situation is, should I stay or should I leave?
Yeah. I don't know if it's just sort of how I am, but I'm only willing to put up with so much.
Yeah.
I'm willing to put up with a fair amount of stress and like disappointment and being sort of kicked when I'm down kind of thing. Because like I said, I tried so many things over the years that never worked. Like I could do stuff because I don't like it. And I can do it for an amount of time. But then there's some things that, I don't know, when you're in a different place or time in your life or there's other things going on, I knew that my wife was pregnant at this time. And it was like, okay, well, can I see myself having these kids, go on paternity and then being sat here and then like not wanting to just go and do whatever I want to do at whatever time with the kids and all that kind of stuff. Like it all adds up into that bucket of how much does this cost for me to leave? And then with the other point you made of the founder CEO title, like obviously I'm not a qualified CEO. You're CEO by default if you start a company, which is like there's all variations of that and you can take that however you'd like to. But it's more the, I don't know, it's kind of like there was a community that looked to me and how I was doing stuff because I was the CEO of that company rather than like, oh, Ben's uniquely qualified specifically for this. So that's why we looked to him. But it was kind of comes through that because I built that company. And I felt guilty for feeling bad about now there's no a community looking to me because I decided to sell the company. But I'd had that sort of almost closure in my head of I'm willing to sell this company. It took this much blood, sweat and tears to get it going and everything else we did to build it. And then I'm willing to sell it. I've come to terms with that before I've sold it. And after I've sold it, it's then I didn't think about because I've given up my baby thing. I wasn't worried about it's like selling your baby, but it was more afterwards. I was like, these unsuspecting things that I didn't think I would have cared about are affecting me. Some maybe sort of they're accumulating together to affect me at once over time. But yeah, it was just a weird, like, oh, I had no, it's like that purpose. Like if you're the CEO of that company and there's all these thousands of people looking at it and reaching out to all the time, yes, it can be annoying at times, but it's one of those, it's like people care enough that that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I still to this day, like hear so many people saying like, oh yeah, I remember MakerPad back in the day. It was awesome. I used it to do this thing or build this thing. And I just like, I forget about that.
Yeah.
Like that was the whole point of the company. It's like, that's where it started.
Yeah. It sounds like the things that added up were losing that sense of identity, losing that sense of purpose at the same time, because when you're the founder of a company, you have a sense of purpose of what you're trying to accomplish. Then I would say probably the third one is just losing that leadership where you get to build the company and the culture in the way you want to. People rely on you for guidance and thoughtfulness of the vision of where the company's going. And all that gets replaced when you sell your company. So how long did you stay at Zapier?
I did two years. So that was 4 years. And that was, yeah, so Ben's Bytes had launched in the October. And it just came to a point where I thought, well, okay, I'm an acquired founder. I've got a newsletter. I can go and be a VC. So I can go down that path. So I started then thinking about, okay, I'll raise a fund and go and be an investor and have this AI newsletter. And I have done that. So I can't sort of claim that I haven't. But I still like the building stuff. I think with those three things that you mentioned, there's also another one of having a goal. And I mentioned it earlier where a goal of building a company for me, there was goals within that, of course. But one of the like, sort of outsized goal that maybe I don't talk about with team members and just sort of have to myself or chat with my friends at the pub about is, oh yeah, I'd love to sell this and make loads of money from it. Like that, I just think if you're building a company, you're saying that's not a goal, I don't really know what you're in it for then. Like, there's so many things you have to deal with that aren't great building a company, that like money has to be a fairly substantial factor, I think. At least it was for me. And having that goal met and then being like, I don't have any goal. So like from selling the company, I didn't have any, I had like smaller goals saying, okay, well now let's like transition and get to year one. Let's get to year two. They're not really goals that I'm like passionate about. Or I think I'm willing to put up with certain amounts of stuff to get to a certain goal. And I think that's why there's always these, always people talk about sort of moving the goalposts. Why is it that you always move the goalposts when you reach a certain goal? I think it's because it's the process of having a goal that just gives you something to go for. It doesn't matter where the goal line is. You could always move it. You move it forever, saying, okay, you're not going to be happy at 20 million, 50 million, 100 million. But ultimately, it's not the hitting the goal that matters. It's like having photos, the happy photo here and the happy photo there. Like in the middle is all the stuff that gets you to that next happy photo. You have to like do the things in the middle to like get to that other goal. So the goal to me now, I look at that slightly differently, where it's like, okay, my goals might have changed, where I just want to like just work for myself, don't take any investors. I know I'm not building a bunch of these things. So like I've got a checklist of, or unchecklist, I guess, of we're not doing any of this. And I've got sort of benefit of hindsight thinking, if I was in MakerPad year one now, what would I do with it? And there was things like just run Facebook ads to get customers in for less than they cost to, I just didn't want to do any ads at the start, like when I was running MakerPad. I wanted to, for some reason, stick to everyone came to us organically. Like that matters. Like, who cares? It's just, it's a numbers game. So just things like that. I just think, yeah, there's goals in it, but.
No, I can definitely relate to that. I do think that if you go into building a company, there's a lot of reasons to do it and a lot of goals you can have, but making money from doing it has to be on the list. I mean, I think if anyone says it's not on the list, it might be number five on your list, but to go through all that stress, take on all that risk, make all those sacrifices, you have to get rewarded. You know, you get rewarded non-financially, but the financial rewards is a big factor. So I totally agree with you on that. Now that you're saying you have new goals, like what, and you have like what I call anti goals, what does that look like for you today?
Well, it's literally having a free calendar always, minus your podcast exception.
Same. That's the only thing it's on my calendar is pick up daughter podcast review and workout. That's how I like to leave it.
Yeah, exactly. Because I don't know, I loved having the freedom. And it's not to say that I don't spend enough time doing work. Like, I spend plenty of time doing work. But if I hear the kids crying after their 2:30 nap, I just want to go and see them. I want to go and hang out there. I want to do whatever and take them swimming tomorrow morning instead of doing anything else. Like, that is one big thing on my list that kind of means that anything I do work-wise still has to fit with that goal. I'm always around. Like, I'll always be around for my family. So that's definitely one. I think it's nice to pick a money goal just for the sake of it. And it's going to be a higher goal than the last one, because why not? I'm here as well. It doesn't mean that I would, like, if I was doing anything and I'm going to sell it again, I wouldn't do it for less. But it just means that I have something that I'm working towards or thinking about, or there's a reason why I have this and I think there's a big opportunity for it and all the rest of it. And I just want to work on, like, I never wanted to do a VC type company. I'm not that kind of founder. I'm more like an indie founder. And it's just knowing where your competency cuts off. I think it's knowing that. And I think going through doing MakerPad, thinking of all these other ideas that could be great, like, okay, this is kind of a different skill set. Even the newsletter one is kind of, it's a different thing, but it's not that hard. But even sort of recognizing that, okay, I'm pretty okay at building these education style companies, the bootstrap versions, not the big ones like you were working on previously. But I think that fits me, that fits my style, that fits the sort of people I'm going after, and it fits my lifestyle and everything else around it. So like understanding that about myself took a little while, but I think it's actually helpful in thinking about doing what I'm next.
So I went, we could talk about acquired founders in a few, but I went through the application and one of the questions on there was, since selling, what have you experienced? Now, I'll just read some of them off. And I'm wondering if you've experienced all of these things and we could pick one to dive into. So spent some of the money, invested it, started a new business, started a passion project, picked up habits, focused on health, took time off, questioned your happiness, which I hope like I clicked on that one, felt sad or depressed, struggled with a purposeful goal, which we just talked about, and used a therapist. Did you experience all of those things?
Yeah, experienced all of those. I don't think it was in that sequence.
Yeah. And I think everyone that goes through this is going to experience all of these things. You are going to feel sad and depressed. You're going to question your happiness. You will have no goals. I went to see two different therapists. I focus on my health. I took time off. I explore a lot of habits and started a passion project. I haven't started a business yet, but I've started to invest it. And the first thing I did was I spent it. Like I went, all those things I wanted as a kid, I bought them. And then I came to a point where I didn't want to buy anything, which is also a weird transition. Did you experience anything similar?
Yeah, I did exactly the same. So the first day after we signed the documents, I went to the Aston Martin garage because I always wanted an Aston Martin. So I went there and like, yeah, sold my company yesterday. I own an Aston Martin. And yeah, so I bought one and, you know, bought a house, did a really nice sort of delayed honeymoon because ours was cancelled because of COVID stuff. So sort of went all out on that kind of thing and nothing else since. I just traded my car in actually because I've, like I said, got twins now. So yeah. I went for the bigger 4x4 Aston Martin. But, still got but I mean, yeah, I'm not lavish with anything else. Particularly, like I don't buy too much stuff other than I just wanted a car, wanted a nice house. So that's kind of where we went with that.
And you start investing as well.
Yeah, probably too much too quickly.
Same.
But, and it's annoying because I used to read the subreddit FatFire, which is lots of these people who want to retire with 8 figures plus. If you ever ask anything on there, like many people do, lots of the comments are just like, hey, check all the other threads that have the exact same, hey, I'm a lost founder with this kind of situation. And I get that Reddit is that kind of place, but it's not very comforting when someone's like written this whole post and that's the response that you get. I think it's like, I just kind of want to know that I've been heard and hey, yeah, don't do this, try and do that. But lots of the replies I see to stuff like that is don't spend or don't like overinvest it. And I'd like to think if it happened again now, or if it happened, if I went back in time, I wouldn't do that. But I don't know, it was crypto summer and everyone was like, there's money everywhere.
Yeah, that's so when random meme stocks were going 100x in one day. They're just, you could have thrown a dart at a wall of stocks or crypto and you would have made money in 2021.
Yeah. So yeah, I did. I overinvested stuff. It just means that like it's locked away that I can't spend it, which is fine. And it's in places that I would put money into again now. So it's not like I feel like I put it somewhere that I'm like, well, that was just 500K down the drain. So it's not, it's just like, this is for future me. But I think, I don't know, at times I always think, oh, I wish I just had that bigger stack that I'd saved aside. But
yeah. So how are you investing the money today? Are you keeping a lot of cash, investing in startups, stock market, crypto, like what's a snapshot of how you're investing the portfolio?
Yeah, so mostly in funds, so VC funds, a bit in the stock market, not that much, to be honest. I just sort of always keep a sort of year or so of cash just for the sake of it, I think. And that's mostly it. I think any crypto stuff is all, I don't really buy it directly. I just go through funds because I just think, and maybe this is from a few years ago, being like, I don't know what I'm doing too much, and I don't really want to think about it all the time. I'd rather put it in the hands of someone else who does. So anything like, I did a bunch of angel investments and stuff, and obviously I've got my fund now, so I invest through that for actual startups. Yeah, I'm in a bunch of funds and things like that, really.
And maybe transitioning to acquired founders. So why, I remember you were thinking through that idea in 2022 when we caught up. So this is probably a good example of an idea that just didn't go away.
Yeah.
Why did you start it?
Yeah, so acquiredfounders.com. I was surprised that domain was available. Yeah, I spoke to you about it, because I think that's why I actually reached out to you. It was like, hey, I'm a lost founder. I know you recently sold yours. Are you having any of these struggles? Like, can we talk about it? I spoke to someone else as well who just gone through the same thing, or she was going through the same thing. And I was like, there should be a thing. There should be a place, a community for people like this to go. And again, I was thinking, there's a few reasons why I didn't start it then. One was, like, how I got the energy to start a community again. Which I should have, because it's not like a big, open, massive community. It's more of a like private, small group of people.
Yeah, if you would have started it back then, it would have been so helpful for like my journey. Just because I had no idea what I was about to go through. And all those things you listed in that application were things that I went through. And I started to meet other founders that were going through it. And then I realized what I was going through was totally normal. But man, if you would have created that, that would have been so helpful for me for those like 2 years.
And I didn't realize it would have been really helpful for me at that time as well.
Yeah.
Because I'd obviously experienced enough of it to reach out to you and think about that idea. But then I just didn't actually action it. I don't know if I just didn't have the energy or whatever it was. But also it felt like I'm still working at Zapier. Like, is this the right thing to be doing? It feels kind of like I had a great experience with them. I don't ever want to tarnish that relationship. It's not about that. Like, if I'm going to do that, I can do that in the future. It's one of those things that, it's one of those ideas that doesn't matter if there's 50 other groups that also have a similar offering, because I'm not trying to run that as like a business. There is like a paid entry, but it's like a one-time thing. It's a pretty low price just to make sure that like it's sort of brought into the community. This isn't just a anyone can join kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I just kept on seeing tweets of people who have sold companies. There was a guy called Rox on Arvid Carl's podcast who talked about it. And I think it was like mid six-figure deal, but it was like life-changing for him. And he just talked about all the same things that we just sort of spoken about. I was like, this is just universally happening. There's loads more, I don't know, publicly talked about indie projects getting acquired. I don't know how big they need to be to sort of still go through all the same emotions. I don't know if there is a minimum threshold either. And different amounts of money mean different things for different people. And it was just one of those things that, again, I was like, there's just so much of this talk. And I just know they're going to probably do what I did and be like, okay, I'll just sit here and sort of suffer in silence. And I don't know. So I was like, oh, fuck it. I'm just going to put a landing page up. I might have just put a landing page up that evening. I was just like, yeah, let's see about this. And yeah, we've got a good group of people already on the list. So this was like a couple of weeks ago that I launched it. And yeah, like I said to you, I'm going to kick it off this week and try and just like, yeah, share a bunch of stuff about my story and maybe just put this podcast in to cover a lot.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
And then other people willing to do it.
So going back to what we were talking about earlier, what I'm curious about is, why put this in the execution bucket? Why did you decide to execute it?
Well, I think a combination of like just seeing over and over again, people
got it,
selling stuff and like talking about the same thing, and then specifically mentioning like, I don't know where you go to talk about this kind of thing.
It sounds like you're waiting. It sounds like the past few years you were waiting for someone to create something. You kept seeing more and more people talking about it with no solution. So you thought, okay, I just need to do it now because no one else is going to do it.
Yeah, I think so. I think when I spoke to you, I was like, if I'm going to jump to something next, is this the thing that I'm going to do? So that has to be like, that's my business choice, that thing. That felt a bit too high stakes to try and run that as my full-time thing. Because I think ultimately what makes it better for the actual community that will join is it not being run like a business from the person who created it. So that was in my mind. So now I have a business that's doing fine.
Got it.
I could be like, okay, this is not a business decision. This is I want to see this exist because I needed this, probably do still need it. And I think other people do too. And launching the application, seeing what people are saying in that application, it's like, yeah, there's people in there who I sold 2 years ago. I still feel exactly the same. I don't know what to do. Well, the rest is still all the same thing. Like, it doesn't kind of go away.
Are you referring to my application?
It might be my own application. Yeah. So just felt like, yeah, I can do that. It's a lower stakes thing if it's not my main business. So yeah, that's why I did it.
That all makes sense. So I have to ask you about AI because that's the world that you've dived deep into for the past couple of years. I guess we could go down two different paths here. One is you building your personal AI executive assistant, or we could go down the other bucket of how companies are using AI to become more productive.
Let's do the first one. So I mentioned my assistant, who's also my therapist. She's now fully qualified. So at some point this year, she's going to stop being my assistant.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh shit, okay, fine. But actually, I'm not very good at delegating any tasks to an assistant where I just think, oh, don't worry, I'll just
do
it. Sort that out myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to tell you to go and book this flight where I'm on the page to book the flight, I'll just book the flight.
Like, yeah.
I don't need to do a lot of that stuff. It's a nice idea, though. And I think if it wasn't a human, I think I might be more inclined to just ping stuff over and be like, no, you're wrong. No, you're not doing it right. I don't want to do that to a human. Yeah. So I thought, okay, well, and actually Zapier launched this platform called Central, Zapier Central. So it's kind of like looks like a ChatGPT interface chatbot, and you can add triggers and actions to it. So with Zapier, you've got loads of integrations. You can basically just add those to this chatbot so it has those capabilities within the chat. So I started adding things like viewing my Google Calendar events and finding emails, sending emails, drafting emails, access to my Google Sheets to like read sheets, add spreadsheet rows. You've got to add a bunch of different actions there. And in my mind, I was thinking, well, actually, I could go and, because one of the workflows I have tried to build, not that successfully yet, is I've got a meeting with someone in 15 minutes. Who is it? Who is it? What's the background of them? Like, just give me a quick, like, few message summary of what I'm supposed to be talking about or what they're pitching, who they are, background, stuff like that. And I thought, well, actually, I can build this with this Zapier Central. I could just have find 15 minutes before an event, find my event, what I've got with someone else, look them up, look through my email for that email address, find some context within our email thread of like, what are we supposed to be talking about and who this person is? And that worked pretty well, actually. So I did that.
How did you build that? What tools did that? You just give Zapier access to your Gmail?
Just on the Zapier thing. Yeah. So you can talk to it in natural language and build it that way. And it just, literally just added find calendar events, like search my email as the actions, authenticated it, like have my accounts all connected, just pinged it saying, who's my next meeting with? Said, your next meeting is with Logan. I say, what's it about? It says all that stuff. So
that's amazing. It would be super, you know how when you work with the EA, you have what most people do is they'll write like a SOP or standard operating procedure of their preferences and what they like. I think if you combine those two things, it kind of, like when you think about travel, it's like, okay, I fly these airlines. Here's my frequent flyer number. I liked, to sit on the aisle at this, price point, and I want it to be a direct flight. Like that shit is so time consuming. But if an AI assistant can do all those things and maybe even either present you with options or just even bucket for you, I think that, man, would save so much time.
Yeah, well, So you have, you can set instructions for this.
Oh, really?
Bot to talk to as well. So part of your SOP could be for travel, and then you either put some stuff in there, or you can upload documents as part of this, or like you have a Google Sheet that has your preferences of your travel stuff, all that stuff, and you say, for travel, if I'm talking about a flight, look at my flight detail requirements in Google Sheets, and it'll be able to like do all of that at the same time. So yeah, I was sort of testing it with a few things. Like,
yeah, you gotta,
someone posted their P&L and I was like, okay, well, I'm just gonna like chuck that in there and then just sort of ask it questions saying, oh, okay, can you sort of calculate my profit for the last 3 years? And we'd do that and it would like build a table and show the growth rates and stuff. And it's like, yeah, you can just reference different documents by chatting to it and just like connecting all this stuff up. So yeah, I think it's got a way to go, but it's like they launched it in whatever they call it, preview. So it's early, but there's lots of promising stuff that I think is going to be really interesting.
So is your plan to keep or find a new assistant, or are you going to try to automate most of it?
I'm just going to not have one. I don't think I need one really. And I just think that it's mostly like if I have to deal with the house stuff, that's what it was really helpful for.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I can automate all of that necessarily, but I think mostly for all the things that I would want to delegate to an assistant that I actually haven't, like there's loads of those things that I think actually I would use this sort of system to do that stuff. So like send me meeting summaries anytime I've actually had a call with my AI note taker taking notes, send me that in a different format. Any action items from that, actually send that directly to my Reflect to add to my list.
Yes.
All of those things, I think, when you think about what Zapier does, which is all the automation stuff, and then you think about like chatting with an interface and combining the two, there's like something really interesting. You think of one thing, you think, actually, there's loads of things like this that I could do and have done with this platform. So I think it's pretty exciting. But
yeah, you have to create a content around this. I would read or watch all those videos or articles to replicate that process too.
Yeah, definitely. I will do.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for jumping on the show. This has been really fun. I think a lot of founders that have gone through it, I think they'll find it very relatable. And for founders that haven't gone through it, they'll kind of get a preview of what it's like. So just sharing your experience and creating acquiredfounder.com as a community for those founders, I think is going to be pretty game changing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think like, obviously we talked about being really sad and depressed and everything else after selling. I'd much rather be sad and depressed after having a successful exit.
100%.
Previously. So for founders who are not there yet, it's still worth doing, I would say. So yeah, do that and then just join the community and we'll help you navigate the lonely road afterwards, which is actually can be very freeing and interesting. But yeah, it's just knowing that you're not the only one.
Okay. Cool. Thanks, Ben. Really appreciate you jumping on the podcast today.
Cheers.